seventh inning stretch, but don't leave.
My husband's really excited about the World Series, but unfortunately the last game they thought they were going to win got rained out last night, so I'm not sure what's going to happen. But I guess this is the ninth inning, the last presentation. We have a wonderful example, I think, of the different types of pipeline programs which are becoming increasingly important to build capacity in the public health field. And I'm going to talk about something I'm very passionate about as a pipeline program for policy advocacy. This program was put together through a collaboration and really led by not my organization, but SCOPE, which is another community-based organization in South Los Angeles. And unfortunately, they couldn't be here with us to present today, but I really do want to credit them, SCOPE, and Jennifer Ito and Fran Jamont for their leadership in putting together this project. So just to give you a little bit of background, I'm not going to focus on that too much. I'm going to focus on the results of the project today because we've actually completed the project and are moving towards forward on expanding the program in collaboration with our partner. Most of you are maybe fairly familiar with South Los Angeles, sort of the health disparities, along with some of the health crisis issues that have happened in the last few years. If Googling it, you can get more background information, but essentially, the hospital was closed last year, unfortunately, due to the accreditation quality problems. Charles Drew University, the medical school board, the school was decertified, lost its accreditation, and they've put together a new board of directors. And similarly, in other areas of the community, for example, the Children's Planning Council also was decertified. So I think these all point to a real need and why we came together to put together this leadership program. Again, it was a partnership of three organizations and community development tech. This was a really key piece. I've done these leadership projects before. Partnering with a community college is a really wonderful thing. Not only could we offer college credit to participants in this program, but it also gave us an option for sustainability. We spent a year developing the curriculum, which I'm passing around, just planning for an implementation and recruitment, getting all our materials together. We did two class years in 2007 and 2008, and we offered 16 and 6-week courses. Obviously, the 6-week course didn't quite run in conjunction with a community college, but they allowed us to do the shorter course anyway. And by doing that, we kind of put two different types of models of a curriculum to use and build upon. Our goals and objectives, we wanted to train 60 folks, and we wanted to give them the skills and knowledge to really look at the root causes of the racial and ethnic health disparities in the community, and then also to have the capacity to provide leadership in policy settings, be it, at the Board of Supervisors meeting where they're talking about options for healthcare services in South LA, or providing leadership on health policy in their own community-based organization. A lot of the participants were already connected to our coalition members working in the community, or they were volunteers, somehow connected to a community-based organization. And I think that's a great strategy in terms of recruitment. And our target was not huge, but to see 25% participation in some type of health policy at the end. The curriculum is very hands-on, popular education. Partnering with grassroots organizations like SCOPE and COCO, Community Coalition, they really understand the popular education. They have the curriculum already in place, and this is one example of a skit they have put together previously to this called the Corporate Healthcare Agenda, where folks really understand how the policy and the history of the healthcare system came about and can see how different groups are disenfranchised as a result of that. And so really looking at how this impacted folks, we had an external evaluation and an internal. So we evaluated ourselves, and then someone from outside, a research firm, looked at our results as well. We had three data collection methods, essentially observation of the class, participant surveys, who went through the leadership class, of course, and then we did follow-up interviews 6 months out from both years' classes, and also interviewed the folks who put the program together. And this is the 2007 class. We had about 30, around 30, each year, with the second year, 2007, being a little bit bigger. The race and ethnicity breakdown, very diverse and representative of the community, 2007 year being a little bit closer match to the actual demographics of South Los Angeles. And so our benefits and outcomes, we met the objective, so that's always great that you get the folks into the program that you intended to, the number. But generally, the quality of the program and the results we see were great. We increased not only engagement and also awareness, so we see folks participating more in the community on advocacy issues. And then also during the class, there was a high level of participant engagement as a result of the way we structure the curriculum and the instructors' methods. It was highly relevant and useful, so that has implications in terms of, folks felt they were developing their leadership skills, getting the skills that they needed to be effective in their job or in their community. This is just a graph showing that most folks strongly agreed when they completed the class that they had increased their skills as a health policy leader.
How long after? We're gonna just wait until.
That's okay. Your question was how long. This was immediately the last class evaluation, based on the last class evaluation. And these are just some remarks that we got from participants, that show kind of more tangibly, how either that they want to take more classes or that they're going to work actively to talk about the healthcare crisis in the community. Lessons learned, conclusions. I think, a program run by advocates, sometimes you tend to focus on only one viewpoint. So that's something that the external evaluators pointed out, and I could agree with that conclusion. The instructor was a very passionate advocate, Sylvia Drew Ivey, the daughter of Charles Drew, who the university is named after. So, and also a former executive director of a clinic, THE clinic in the community. So she's very passionate, but it's sometimes hard to bring out all the viewpoints. A lot of the leadership involved in this project was African American, and so when we had in our second year, one of the executive directors from the Latino Watt Century Latino organization, helped us, and several of his advocates, members pointed out, you need to bring in more Latino perspectives to the curriculum. And then finally, this is just kind of a survey course that we threw together. It was an experiment. So what we're going to see next in terms of the sustainability of this is that the community we're working together in partnership along with other community organizations in South Los Angeles to sustain this course, build it into a certificate course, and eventually an associate course that hopefully gives a long-term pipeline for the community into health policy or other areas of public health careers. And this pieces of this course will then be infused into that associate degree. And I went back and forth with our evaluator on this, trying to help them understand that when you do these programs, the intent is not that the graduates will end up on one particular coalition or our coalition, but they'll go back to the communities or the organizations that they were already connected to and provide leadership there where they want to be. So I think in that sense, there's probably a higher level of success in just having an understanding with our evaluator about what we really intended to do. I think that, you know, you've got 60 folks out there spread throughout the community, you know, working towards advocating for policy change in their community. And it's not, you have to have a lot of funding if you expect to continue to bring those folks together. And it just may not be realistic or make sense because those folks are working in multiple areas. We didn't recruit them from one organization or just our organizations. Thank you for hearing the lessons we learned and success stories, and hopefully it provides you know, a useful tool and guide to folks who are considering doing a leadership effort in their communities. Thanks.
So we have 10-15 minutes for questions now. Have any other any questions for the presenters? Go ahead.
I know that LHPP is one of the programs that's actually the first one like this in the United States, and we're actually working with National Council La Raza. We're trying to implement something throughout, but it's still in the making. But I don't know of another organization, another, you know, institution that's actually doing something. I know that we work with Berkeley. We've actually had people from Berkeley come and try to see and how they could just simulate the same program in their campus. And so it's just a working process right now. Pharmacist-wise, I've been the project coordinator for the last 2 years and a half, and I know as of right now we do have some students that are actually doing their prerequisites to get into the pharmacist. I know we do have two medical students and one that went into law school, and there's a couple of you that have gotten their PhD at this point, but a pharmacist, not yet. I mean, it's in the making, so... You know what, I personally have to say this because I was actually a student that, I mean, I got accepted to the program, and I remember I was in financial aid probation at the time when I met Britt, and I didn't know about the program. My counselor mentioned it to me, and the retention rate was the fact that, I mean, the way I felt that I was retained in that program was because I had the mentorship. I mean, at this point, I was completely lost. I told myself, if I don't do it now, this is it. My whole professional career is over. My parents didn't know what was really happening because first generation being Latina going to college. So the fact that I had mentorship, I actually had other students that went through the same thing that I did, had the right resources to go and speak to, and to know that it's not the end of the world, that you can move forward. I mean, it had a lot to play with. And at the same time, the internship that we actually do after the second year, I actually had more hands-on experience that I could see myself doing this in a broader level. And I personally have to admit that I just thought I was going to go into med school and that was it. Sciences didn't work for me, and I thought my career was over. And I didn't know healthcare existed. And I remember that I finished the program, well, actually my healthcare administration, in a year when it took me 4 years to go with sciences and sciences. So I know from my personal experience, it's just the mentorship, the guidance, and especially the campus that we work, where we're at, Cal State Long Beach. I could see they help the students and they take them to a different level. So, thank you.
Ms. McCain.
I'm sorry, can you repeat? Oh, okay. I put it on the slide on the USB and I didn't. Do you want my email address? Would that be easiest, or phone number? It's nancy@chc-inc.org. You're welcome.
Just a second. One of the things we promote in health administration leadership really is diversity of people that are in these positions. Since one of your objectives is to have these people that you are training occupy leadership and supervisory roles, what is the racial breakdown of individuals that are in your program?
He's asking about the ethnic. I don't have the exact figures. The question was asked what is the racial or ethnic breakdown for the Rocky Mountain Public Health Education Consortium programs. During our research, we did look at what were the breakdown, and unfortunately I don't have those numbers with me. But we have representation from all groups except for Pacific Islanders. We have had African Americans in our program as well as those from different tribal areas, Navajo, and then we have had as well as like Latino and Hispanic participants. And most of them also come from, we also look at the geographic breakdown, so where they're coming from as far as if they're frontier or rural areas too. And so we consider those as well as underserved, as well as male participants. We've had a few male participants as well.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
Oh, great question. Sure. The Welcome Back program, I don't know if any of you have heard of that. It's funded by the California Endowment, and it's a California program, but I think the model would work anywhere. They have a center in San Francisco and one associated with one of the schools in the South. And this is a program where anyone trained in a health profession from another country goes in there. There's an assessment. You have to be legal, so it's not, they can't get you legal status necessarily, but you get an assessment of skills and look at, what your licensure preparation would translate to, and there's a whole process of sort of, moving into the health professions in some way. So it's not always an easy transition. Physicians may work as nurses or may work as laboratory people or something or other because our requirements are so different than other countries. But it's a program that has, I don't know the website. Were you going to say the website? You know the program? Okay. Anyway, Welcome Back program, California Endowment, and they've got some great reports on their success in terms of getting people into the professions. This particular one is in California, but the model could work anywhere.
From my own personal experience, I came here in 1985. I was a practical nurse from the country that I came from. I tried to get into the system, and it was just loaded with roadblocks. I said, okay, this is their preparation, this is what I have, and this is something I already had done that change, and how national is it right now with them trying to renew you? Because you covered a lot of skills, and still they're saying they have a nursing shortage, but then these are nurses that are proven already, because a hernia is a hernia is a hernia in any country. You know, God bad is bad, God bad is any country.
Well, that's what these two programs do, and I think that that's what we realized is we have all these folks working in other industries and, you know, in the service industry, and we're not. I don't know if the shortage drove it, probably somewhat, but that's what these types of programs do. They require a lot of funding to sort of offer the whole cadre of courses. So, but I think that is definitely a good solution. The problem is our regulatory system. You know, it's not. If you want to look at, there's an organization called CLEAR, and it's a credentialing, and I don't know exact acronym, but it looks at sort of all the credentials and regulations that each country has. It's not easy to move to take these professions between any countries, because everybody set up their own standards, and we don't have a global, nurse, we don't have a global anything. Maybe we'll get there someday, but otherwise it's all this sort of piecemeal, working it out.
Go ahead, sir.
I have a question also about the nursing issue. You spoke a lot about taking people with an associate's degree to a bachelor's degree, but there's also a lot of these accelerating programs, you have a degree in something
else, right.
And then within 1 year training, maybe it's 2 years, then you also become a nurse. Which ones are helping fill the gap better? Is the strategy to take more of the AA nurses to the bachelor's, or these accelerated programs where someone has a degree maybe in physiology or something else, but then can come into nursing and get their nursing degree in a year or so?
Depends on what gap you want to fill. The kind of program you're talking about, sometimes they're called ELMS, entry-level masters. Sometimes they're called MEPIN, masters entry-level, et cetera. They're all different names. It's basically taking that nurse primarily to, the intention is to take that nurse to a master's degree. So the program is you come in with that whatever background and all the prerequisites. I mean, that you don't take your art history degree right into medicine or nursing without ever having to take those prerequisites. It's a matter of when you take it. And you do the RN skill part first and get your license. The intent is that you come back and do the master's. So in some ways that may not address the bedside nurse issue, because a lot of those folks may not be right at the bedside. They might be in, you know, more management positions, et cetera. However, most of them do, because they've had no nursing, tend to work at the bedside. There are few programs, and they're very impacted, so they're hard to get into. Our MEPIN program has probably 7 times as many applicants as they take people. The RN, the ADN to the BSN, it doesn't add a nurse. It adds to their qualifications, but it's not going to add a new nurse. It's going to raise the bar for that nurse. They can work in some of the institutions that require a bachelor's degree. So it's a good career thing, but it may not add to the total number of nurses.
I'll just go ahead and ask the last question before we call it quits. Since we do not really support the training of these foreign nurses, and they do come here to work for us. There have been a discussion both on PBS and several journals about moral obligations that we have in the United States on this. My intent is not to put you on the spot, but what is your position, or what is California's position on this? Do you all intend to go to Kenya, Angola, Ethiopia, and give money to the government in this training? Because APHA has a position statement addressing this concern. What are your thoughts on those?
Stealing nurses? Is that
yeah, because, I mean, because they call it brain, what is it, brain
drain.
Brain drain. So
what's the other word?
even though it's improving our health here, it has implications for these developing countries.
Well, there's an international opinion on this.
Yeah.
The International Council of Nursing looked at this a long time. For a while, this country looked at nursing shortage and went to places like South Africa where there's English-speaking nurses trained in an English tradition of nursing and just, you know, stole everybody and left them no one. So, and these contract companies would be over. There was actually a 60-minute segment on this that was excellent. So the International Council of Nurses, ICN.org, probably did come up with an ethical position about this. The challenge is, it is really a two-sided thing. For that nurse, you're offering them an opportunity to make a better living mm-hmm. and improve their economic status, maybe the status for their family. On the other hand, that country that the nurses have been taken from, yeah. you know, is left in a very, because they take the best nurses too.
Yeah.
So it has been discussed, and there is this opinion from the International Council of Nurses agreeing to a policy of not sort of ripping the heart out of nurses and nursing in other countries, but having some sort of way of looking at that. Countries like the Philippines and maybe China actually educate more nurses than they need and mean for them to go abroad and work and send home the money. So it's a complicated issue.
Let's thank the presenters for doing a very good job. Thank you all for coming. The session is officially over.
I didn't know you are here.
No, you don't. Now I know. You know, here's my cat.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Oh,
look at this.
Yeah, the hospital. I didn't know you are here.
Is he here?
Yeah, doctor. Yeah, he was sitting over there. He just left now.
Who?
Your director.
Oh, I thought you said doctor. Okay. Yeah.
James Stone here. We are with James every day. Actually, this morning we are in a meeting together too.
Oh, okay.
The family has everything being
everything is
okay. Oh, a lot of cards.
Can you write something?
Sure.
Oh, write it on mine.
Sure.
And you know, I lost my cell phone last night. I'm going to have my cell phone.
Oh.
Good
to see you after this many years. The last time I saw you was in Atlanta, right? You came to Atlanta for something.
Yes, the EP. It's about 5 years.
Environmental health, monitoring, tracking stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But that grant, we completed the effort. So. It's Ivy and your children too. Huh?
Everybody's doing fine.
Where are they?
My son is in a Georgia Southern University. He's in second year.
My gosh.
Yeah, my daughter is in 11th grade.
You're done. My MBA 7 at CDC.
Including 7 schools do it better than
that there's an appreciation that
those things are needed. Too. I travel a lot, but I have my, I always have my BlackBerry, so even if you send me an email, I will get it every time.
Okay.
How are your kids? Good boys now, your son?
My son is in third year, you are French engineering. He changed schools, he changed courses, so.
What's he doing? What did he study at Morehouse?
He wanted engineering, then he goes there and says they are not serious.
So he moved back
to home, and so he's doing business at U of H.
Oh, business, not engineering again?
I'm telling you, he's a kid. Oh. And my daughter is a lawyer now.
Oh, your daughter?
She's practicing it. She came to, she went to Spelman.
So she doesn't have a law school.
But she's finished that and then done her graduate school.
Oh, she went to law school after that?
Yes, she's practicing now.
In Atlanta?
No, he did the law at LSU.
So, but she's practicing in Houston now?
Yes, and took the Texas bar.
Wow!
So, that's done.
And your husband didn't come back from Ghana?
For me?
He didn't come back from Ghana? I don't know, he went back.
Yeah, he did. He couldn't stay. He kept using in Philadelphia. Struggling, I heard.
Their regional reports, one to San Diego and one to LA.
Are you still living in the Southwest?
Sort of.
Are you retired now? Are you come to retire? You have enough years to retire?
January.
Why don't you go ahead and teach with Dr. James? They need a teacher.
And the story is
really let me talk to you.
How underrepresented Latinos are.
I've sent two people
so
to you.
So there's a lot of data in those reports that you might
have. Well, we were talking about that yesterday.
The Latino population in all of these health professions. You know, some of them are entry-level, but then, and that's a place to start. But it's really about, you know, what is it about the Latino population and just being underrepresented in all of these health professions, except for the entry-level one, and then how do you work it out? So you might be interested in those reports,
okay, well, thank
but
you. Yeah.
I don't have one of these.
I know, because he was just running his presentation.
Yeah.
So we were just brainstorming off and stuff, but I missed most of your presentation because right now I'm trying to transition into a different career.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Well, here I need to learn from you.
Okay.
Great. Right now, that's why I was like, okay, I just wanted to read, but I'll make sure I'll look into it a little bit. To make sure, I mean, so you're based off of San Francisco?
Yeah, we don't have a CRNA program. I don't know where they are down here, but you know, you can look on the Board of Registration website about CRNA. Seems to still be a really good profession. Very high paying. There's some competition. The anesthesiologists are.
I've done my research, and there's been some conflict. But at this point, if you just do
a good, great career, though.
Yeah, it's a great career. I was applying. So I applied for PA, but then right now, somebody. I just sat down, and I can see the nursing potential.
CRNA is a good career. Very comfortable.
I won't do it for them. I mean, it's just because I want
no, but you need to. You need to be able to. You need to be able to make a living out of it and stay in it. You can't earn. You can start in a $10 an hour job, but you can't stay there forever.
Exactly.
Or who wants to? Anyway.
No, but thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.